8. Kerr got on his breathe mask. He tiptoed over to the machine and picked it up, using only one arm. Then he tiptoed over to the door and suddenly swung it open as though walking out. A wave of breathe gas burst out of the room. Lars was standing there, frozen in the act of attaching a listening device to the door. He wore no air mask. The invisible puff of breathe gas hit Lars full in the face. He must have been in the act of taking a breath at that moment, for he rose on his toes like someone being strangled. He gagged. He reeled back. He fought for air. He started to turn blue. In another few seconds, he would start into convulsions. Johnny and Angus grabbed him, one on each arm, and rushed him back to clearer air. Angus fanned him with a metal plate he'd found on the floor. Gradually, Lars came back to life. The blue tinge faded. But what he said was, "What were you doing in there?" And he said it angrily. "Now, now, laddie," said Angus soothingly. "Here we are, saving your life, and you're making mean sounds." Lars was looking at Johnny with a peculiar expression on his face. Johnny went over to where Kerr was rattling the housing around in the car as though he had just put it there. "It's all right now," said Kerr. "No cracks or metal faults in the housing. We better go see if it fits." They drove off and left Lars lying there, gazing after them with that peculiar look. "Why is he looking at me that way?" asked Johnny. "You better be careful," said Kerr. "He's a crazy one, and he's the council's long nose and pry. He's got some idea that somebody named Bitter or Hitter was the greatest military leader in your history, and if you stand still for 10 seconds, he'll begin on you. It's some church. There's nothing wrong with religion, but plenty wrong with what he says. Turl wrecked his wits. But there wasn't much there in the first place. Ha ha."
"But why that peculiar look at me?" asked Johnny.
"Natural suspicion," said Kerr. "Say, you know, I feel a lot better since talking to you creatures. I sure am glad I'm different."
They stopped and got out below the top compound level where Turl's office was. They removed the housing from the car and struggled up the ramp with it. Just before they went in, Angus stopped them.
"Why couldn't Turl fix this place up himself?"
Kerr laughed.
"When Johnny left here, he said to spread it that the place was booby-trapped. But that isn't all of it."
He indicated the door to Turl's office with a paw wave.
"If the cyclos got out from the dormitory section, they could come here and kill anybody working here. Turl's pretty sure they'd kill him if they got loose. They hate him."
"Wait," said Johnny. "That means Turl will get them killed before he moves in here." He put a hand on the door latch to the office. "You did debug this place and look for booby traps."
"Ha ha," said Kerr. "I had been tearing this place to bits waiting for you."
They went in and set the housing down. Indeed, the place was a wreck. Wires pulled out, the old breathe gas circulator scattered in bent pieces on the floor, desks and chairs askew, paper thrown about. Johnny looked it over. At once he saw that in Turl's inner office, the whole lower section of the wall to the right of Turl's desk, as he would sit at it, was lined with large locked compartments.
"Been into those?" he said.
Kerr shook his head.
"No keys. A security chief loves his security."
Johnny sent Angus out to find a sentry. The cadets were still the guards in this compound. Kerr, with his blanket authority, repeated what Johnny whispered to him and sent for Chirk. They got to work sorting out wires and papers and trash, and presently 3 cadet sentries showed up with Chirk. She was a long way from the smart-looking secretary of the old days. They had her on 3 chain links attached to a collar. Her fur was all the wrong way. There was no powder on her nose bone and no polish on her triple-jointed claws. She wore just a cloth thrown around her shoulders, no other clothes.
"Where's the keys?" said Kerr, as prompted.
"Keys. Everybody wanted keys."
Her voice was punctuated with fang clicks and snaps and hisses.
"It wasn't enough. Turl brought them all to this and sought to ruin her company record by saying she was disobedient and didn't follow orders. But she had to be dragged all over, in chains, just to say, 'What keys now?' That day of the battle Turl provoked, everybody had been after the keys. Her company duties...
Johnny was quietly whispering in Care's ear. Care whispered back, "You trying to start a riot?" But as Johnny insisted, Care said loudly to Chirk, "Shut up. Just because Turl plans to murder all of you down there is no reason to take it out on us." Chirk went very still. Through the face mask glass, her eyes got very round. The flutter valve of the mask started pumping rather quickly. Johnny whispered again, and Care said, "It might or might not make any difference, but when he moves in here and has free rein of this whole compound, he will be furious with you if the keys aren't found."
The muscles in the middle of her body, where her heart was, were twitching and leaping. The flutter valve stopped totally for half a minute, then started again.
"He's moving in here," she said, so quietly it was hard to hear her through the mask.
"Why else are we fixing it up?" said Care. Then, menacingly, "Where's the keys to those wall doors?"
Chirk shook her head.
"He never let anybody have them. They're maybe gone."
Was that a sob in her breath?
"Well, take her away," said Care gruffly to the guards.
They dragged her off. "What's going on here?" demanded Lars, popping up in the door.
"We're trying to find the access panels to the wiring," snapped Care. "It's all shorted out."
There were breathe gas vials scattered around. Johnny reached behind his back and turned one on. Angus, Care, and himself were wearing masks. Care was reaching in his pocket. He pulled out a handful of items and shoved them at Lars.
"This is a dangerous job. I demand a higher bonus. These were in the first wiring recess."
Lars looked at them. Three were dented bullets that looked like radiation ammunition, but weren't. Another was a bent time fuse of the kind set in small blast holes. The biggest was a wad of malleable explosive compound.
"Somebody has been getting into this office," said Care. "After this, I want the door locked. I want nobody in or out of here but us, and I want you miles away before you kill yourself and get me blamed for it. I know how you work."
Lars was beginning to cough again from the new breathe gas coming out of the vial.
"See," said Care, "these ducts are still loaded with breathe gas and it leaks."
Lars was backing out into the hall, still coughing. He lifted the objects that had been put in his hand.
"Are these dangerous?" "Take them and throw them at your betters and find out," said Care. "And if I see you around here again, I'll tell them you are slowing down this job by issuing orders to take it easy. Get out, go away, stay out. And if I see your face again, you will have to find another expert. Got it? I'll quit."
Lars looked at Johnny in a very peculiar way. But at that moment, from the direction of the distant dormitory three levels down, came some angry howls and snarls. Lars rushed off.
"Did you really find those items in here?" said Angus.
"Of course not," said Care. "Shut, lock, and bar those doors out there, and let's get to work. The last place Turl will want to be for now is in this compound. After we're finished and he sent somebody else to see whether they get blown up is the first he'll want to see of this place."
He listened to the distant howls and roars.
"You sure started a riot, Johnny. Turl will hear that clear out in the cage. That Chirk really told them."
Johnny barred and locked the outer doors, and then gestured from Angus to the wall cabinet locks, and Angus whipped out a small set of picks and went to work on them. They were in business. Chapter 20 1 Their problem was really bugging the place more thoroughly than any place had ever been bugged, while still preventing the bugs from being discovered by one who, although quite mad, was one of the sharpest security chiefs ever to walk out of the mine schools. If they did this well, they would have a total record of the technology of teleportation and its mathematics. They would know what happened to Cyclo, because they would be able to cast out picto-recorders. They would know the whereabouts and possibly the intentions of other races. They would be in communication with the stars and universes and could defend themselves on Earth.
Turl would have to work out and build from scratch a whole transshipment console, for the one out there near the old platform was a burned-out ruin.